Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for February 18th, 2018. This is our weekly look inside the world of politics and policy. We whisk you from City Hall to Springfield and all the way out to the nation's capital. So it's time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, and speaking of great starts, I'll take the rain if it means we start getting warmed up here and the rain can wash away the snow. I was not expecting the snow to be quite what we got yesterday, Dave. I mean, I thought it was quite a snow squall
yes, that moved through, wasn't it?
Well, and then I was thinking of this morning because, you know, a lot of the sidewalks hadn't been cleaned off or anything. I was thinking it was a perfect morning for you to get the newsroom Zamboni out there and get everything iced down.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
We have had the oil change on the Zamboni, and it's been operating quite well.
Yeah, it's very efficient. I want to tell you, the plaza was very nice out here to this morning.
I think I showed you pictures that I took of the Zamboni at the ice skating rink up at Wrigley Field, the new park that they have there.
Yes.
When I was up there, well, around Christmas time, beautiful skating rink, just like the one is down here at Millennium Park. And I asked the man for lessons, and he said, no, just stay behind the fence, will you please?
Stop talking to me.
Yeah, right. I've got work to do.
Right. It's a very focused job, you
and
know.
You know what? It really is, because quite honestly, there were, you know, some very nice people around the area, and every time he would circle around, they'd go, woohoo, you know. And he's got to concentrate on where he's going with the vehicle is what it is. So he didn't have time to wave and yell back and say, hi, how you doing? Much less give me lessons.
Oh, well, it's a perfect job, though. It's like cutting the grass, you know, where you can see the progress you've made.
you know, these days, you know, listen to your favorite music with your headset.
Yeah, just kind of tune out, zone out. No Twitter, no Facebook, you know, just kind of literally chill out on the Zamboni
literally
machine.
Literally chill, right. That's
But it'll be nice to get some warmer weather. And, yeah, that rain, it's supposed to rain heavy at times tomorrow.
Maybe a thunderstorm.
But wash some of this away.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe. Exactly. Not only the dirt and stuff, but melt some more of this snow.
Right.
And a high near 60 tomorrow. That's the one. That's what got my attention.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of Zamboni machines, finally the Hawks end that 8-game losing streak last night. A big win against the Capitals. Of course, it gets marred by some idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
What year is this again?
Yeah, I was just going to say, welcome to 2018, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just a moronic display. And that's not who hockey fans are.
Well, especially Chicago hockey fans.
Right. Yeah. Racist taunts at a Capitol player in the penalty box. Sorry. Goodbye. Don't come back again.
Yeah, I mean, you do it by the penalty box, and there are those guys that are the off-ice officials, are the ones that you see opening the doors and writing down the information about the penalty, because that all has to go to the league.
Right, they're NHL officials.
Yeah, they're also, yeah, exactly. So they were the ones that alerted security to the whole situation, and those fans were promptly ejected from the premises.
And never should have gotten in the first place. That's my view. I'm sorry. There's no room for that. You know, this is a great sport. They're great athletes. You know, you don't get to the NHL if you're not a great athlete.
Yeah, and it's a gentlemanly sport. I mean, they hit each other like crazy, and it's the only sport where after you play against the team in a playoff series, you go 7 games, you're beating the you-know-what out of each other, and they line up and they shake hands.
Right. I mean, it's a respectful sport,
mm-hmm.
and very saddened by that. But thankfully, you know, seven goals. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean,
it's been a while to get more than two goals.
You're right. And it's the first win in the calendar month of February for the Blackhawks as well. They hadn't won since January 30th in that game at Nashville when everybody thought, oh, great, this road trip is starting off on a great note.
Right.
And they're going to make their charge. They're starting to make their run. And then it seemed like every time they would get a lead, they would get some kind of a shot from the point that would trickle through somehow, or a bad break on a penalty or something like that. And something always went wrong. And, you know, you kind of had that feeling yesterday after Taves scored and then immediately
exactly.
The Capitals scored again.
I was thinking the very same thing. I mean, I only made it through the first period, yeah. But I was thinking the very same thing. It's like, okay, we got one in, and now it's going to all go downhill again because no lead's been safe for this team this year.
No, but it was good to see some of the guys that were scoring goals, too. Brandon Saad had two goals in as many games, and, you know, a seven-goal outburst against a guy like Braden Holtby is something to talk about, because Holtby is one of the best goalies in the NHL. And now, you know, Coach Q says, let's see how we follow this up. They got a game against the Kings tomorrow night, and we'll see if they're able to continue the good times of playing a full 60-minute game.
See if we can build off some
Absolutely
things
right.
here, because that's what we have to look forward to, unfortunately, to see what good points we can build off of. I made the mistake yesterday of watching the replay of the Olympic athletes from Russia playing the U.S. Men's hockey team. I don't know what it is, but you know, that ice surface is vastly wider.
Yeah, it's international. It's 100 feet wide.
And it's too big.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're so used to kind of the condensed atmosphere of the NHL, mm-hmm. the snap passes, the quick passes, and there's just more ice opens up the ice, but at the same time, it just kind of seems like it deadens the game a little bit.
Yeah, it's more east-west than north-south sometimes, just because you have that room.
Well, and you can just throw a puck.
Yeah.
And it just kind of will sit there until somebody can go retrieve it kind of thing.
10 minutes later, someone gets to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Any idea why it's wider?
Yeah, it's just the it's
regulation
just,
NHL?
Yeah, just the international rules. They
the international
be a
rules.
Different, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the NBA, in FIBA, in the international situation with the basketball, the lane is like a trapezoid, and it
really
got, oh yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And the 3-point lines are different. So
okay,
yeah, it's
difference
always,
in rules.
They
the
always have to do something
committee.
Different than we do, right?
Right. Then what's normal?
Exactly.
Like they have to ignore common sense.
So if they played baseball, they'd be running around a square rather than
or
a diamond.
Running to third first and then
or,
second,
right,
yeah.
Right, vice versa.
Just spin it around, you know?
That's exactly right. Well, and since we last talked here, too, some sports news here at WGN. How about it?
Yeah, the White Sox will be here. And you
the go-go White Sox.
Go-go White Sox.
Tell you what, I think we're getting on board here at a really good time. This is a young and exciting team that showed some promise last year. Their manager, Rick Renteria, doing a nice job with all the young players they have. This could be a pretty good rotation. You got young guys, you know, Makata. You know, Yolmer Sanchez and guys like that are going to be out on the field. Tim Anderson again in his third or fourth year, trying to live up to the contract that he signed. So this could be a pretty interesting year for the White Sox.
No,
well, they deserve a good season.
Yeah,
I think it'll be a fun year to watch, and mm-hmm. and I don't think anybody's really has any problems with how they're methodically going through the rebuild here.
This has been a blueprint that started even before the Cubs. I mean, this started with the Royals, who won the World Series in 15. Then it was followed up by the Cubs, who did the same thing. And then the Astros also did the same thing, and they win it last year. So, I mean, the formula has been proven to work. The thing is, you know, rebuilds are not easy. This is you have to hit on a lot of things. You have to get fortunate with some of the trades you make and some of the draft choices you pick. And, you know, for the three other teams, it certainly worked out well, and it looks like it's working out pretty well here, too.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I'm obviously always a Cubs fan, mm-hmm. but I probably have been to more Sox games lately. Just I like to watch baseball.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And it's great to have baseball back on WGN. There's no doubt about that. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Tom is in for Casera today to field your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. You can text us at that number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. And we're on Twitter at symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is busy looking for his Joel Horland jersey. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, after the 7:30 news and sports, we'll speak to Elliot Richardson. He's the founder and CEO of the Small Business Advocacy Council, and we'll talk about the group's legislative agenda for small business in Springfield. After the 8 o'clock news and sports break, we'll speak to Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady of Bloomington. We just had the governor's budget message to the legislature. We'll talk to him about that and about Republican politics in this election year. After a final check of the news and sports at 8:30, we'll speak with Brian Mackey. Brian covers state government and politics for NPR Illinois out of WUIS-FM in Springfield. We'll talk to him about the governor's budget message, issues involving sexual harassment in the political world, and a lot more. That's all up ahead, but right now it's time for a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. Of course, a tragic, tragic week here in Chicago. We're still grieving the loss of Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer, who was laid to rest yesterday. I talked to a number of people who knew the commander, talked about just what an exceptional person he was. And, of course, our condolences go out to the family. Actually, on Friday evening, ran into some police detail officers from Delaware who came in for the funeral. Truly a great show of support from officers around the country, and including Canada. We have that, and, of course, we still have everyone reacting to the horrible news on Valentine's Day of the shooting at a Broward County, Florida school that killed 17. The president stopped at a hospital there on Friday, as well as to the local sheriff's office. He tweeted out this morning, late last night, "Very sad that the FBI missed all of the many signals sent out by the Florida school shooter. This is not acceptable. They are spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign." There is no collusion, he says. Get back to the basics and make us all proud. That prompted a congressman from Arizona, Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego, to reply on Twitter, "You are such a psychopath that you have to make even the death of 17 children about you. America will regret the day you were ever born." This is the state of our discourse in America today. Robert Runcie, the school superintendent of Broward County, here's what he had to say that evening in the aftermath of the shooting.
"We are tremendously heartbroken, saddened. Our prayers, the thoughts go out to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas family and the victims. We're going to pull through this together as a community. This has been a day we've seen the worst in humanity. Tomorrow is going to bring out the best in humanity as we come together to move forward from this unspeakable tragedy."
Now, the president waited a day to speak to the nation about the tragedy. And when he did, he said Congress shouldn't react quickly with laws just for the simple sake of reacting.
"We're making our schools and our children safer will be our top priority. It is not enough to simply take actions that make us feel like we are making a difference. We must actually make that difference. In times of tragedy, the bonds that sustain us are those of family, faith, community, and country. These bonds are stronger than the forces of hatred and evil, and these bonds grow even stronger in the hours of our greatest need. And so always, but especially today, let us hold our loved ones close. Let us pray for healing and for peace, and let us come together as one nation to wipe away the tears and strive for a much better tomorrow."
But many are saying thoughts and prayers aren't enough. In Congress, Democratic Representative John Larson of Connecticut, he chastised his colleagues on not taking stronger action in the wake of yet another school shooting.
Hailing from Connecticut and experiencing Sandy Hook and the disasters that just keep on coming, when they come for one of us and we do nothing, who's next? When will we stand up? And all is required is that we do our constitutional responsibility and vote. Otherwise, we are all complicit in what happens increasingly and with devastating impact on our children.
That was Congressman John Larson of Connecticut. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. On Friday, the Justice Department announced indictments against 13 Russian individuals and three Russian entities over interfering with the 2016 elections. The president had labeled Bob Mueller's investigation a witch hunt and a hoax, although after these indictments, it's hard for him to call it that anymore. Here's Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
The indictment charges 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies for committing federal crimes while seeking to interfere in the United States political system, including the 2016 presidential election. The defendants allegedly conducted what they called information warfare against the United States, with the stated goal of spreading distrust towards the candidates and the political system in general.
Okay, we have the commander, Twitter-in-chief this morning. If it was the goal of Russia to create discord, disruption, and chaos within the U.S., then with all of the committee hearings, investigations, and party hatred, they have succeeded beyond their wildest dreams, the president tweets. They are laughing their asses off in Moscow. Get smart, America. That's the president of the United States. Now, the Russian indictments were announced the same week that the National Director of Intelligence, former Senator Dan Coats, warned of a continuing cyber war against the United States. And it's a war, he says, that includes more than just Russia.
Frankly, the United States is under attack. Under attack by entities that are using cyber to penetrate virtually every major action that takes place in the United States. From U.S. businesses to the federal government to state and local governments, the United States is threatened by cyber attacks every day. While Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea pose the greatest cyber threats, other nation states, terrorist organizations, transnational criminal organizations, and ever more technically capable groups and individuals use cyber operations to achieve strategic and malign objectives. Some of these actors, including Russia, are likely to pursue even more aggressive cyber attacks with the intent of degrading our democratic values and weakening our alliances.
That's the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats. Well, we're going to switch to more local topics here right now. And joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Elliot Richardson. He's founder and CEO of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Elliot, as always, welcome, and thanks for joining me this morning.
Rick, thank you so much for having me.
It was a busy week in Springfield. We had the governor's budget message laying out his priorities. He says it's balanced, but he said every budget that he's presented has been balanced, which isn't the case. This may come closer in a balancing act, as it were, if various things were to come to pass. Things like moving the cost, shifting cost of pensions onto local governments, local school districts, local universities, changes in employee health care and collective bargaining, things that, quite frankly, aren't likely to happen. But you know, this is we're in a kind of a real difficult situation here because we're not going to be raising any taxes. It's an election year. Revenue is what it is. It's not growing very fast. It's a difficult circumstance.
Well, it's remarkably difficult, and we're here in the studio in Chicago, and Chicago's an incredible place, and Illinois is a great place, and you want to see politicians solve problems. And unfortunately, these budget addresses on both sides of the aisle, state of the states, state of the unions, you know, what they really have become, in my humble opinion, is more political theater. And when you look at all of them and really dissect them, there's not a whole lot of problem solving going on. It's sort of, you know, talking into an echo chamber, you know, tax cuts in a time when a state is starved of revenue. I completely understand the concept of growing ourselves out of the fiscal hole that Illinois is in. That's a wonderful thing to try to do. But at the same time, you know, are the proposals that are being put forth actually feasible? And that's the real question.
Feasible now, and doable.
And doable. Now, on the other side, it's not enough, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans that are responding, to just poke holes. Like, we need solutions. We need people to put their party, I'm sorry, the state over their party. I said that backwards. Get in a room and try to solve these problems, because our pension crisis isn't going anywhere. And when you think about small businesses and how they feel about this state and investing in this state and creating jobs in this state, they want to see solutions. They want to see real action. And the rhetoric on both sides, I mean, if we're going into another Springfield session with flame-throwing and rhetoric and no real solutions, this state is not going to get any better fiscally, and people aren't going to feel better about it from a business perspective, and we're going to see more migration out of Illinois. And I'll tell you what, the SBAC, we do not want to see that happen. We want to see Illinois grow, not lose folks and not lose businesses. So, you know, I guess sort of coming back to the budget address, there were some good ideas. Are they doable? It doesn't seem likely. They all are. But we need everybody to come together and really sit down, get out that whiteboard, and start solving problems.
And as we've talked in the past, issues of budgetary matters are not just governmental. You look at the bill backlog that at one time was over $16 billion.
Right.
Now, I think, covering around $8 or $9 billion, down significantly, but still. But those vendors are very often small businesses.
Well, they are. And then think about it. So you're going to get a small tax cut, right? But that small tax cut isn't going to cover many times, most of the time, the bills that aren't being paid to you. So, you know, I think most small businesses would say, hey, pay my bills, state of Illinois. I mean, look, most businesses don't want to do business with the state of Illinois right now, and that's a shame. We should be a very large vendor. Or a very large
resource,
and customer to vendors in the state, Rick. But unfortunately, people don't believe that they're going to get paid. So, you know, what we don't want to do is go down that fiscal hole that we've been going down, dig it even deeper, and certainly another budget impasse. I mean, when we look at our legislative agenda for this coming year, I mean, number one, issue number one, agenda item number one, is no budget impasse, no stalemate. Let's have a functional government that begins to restore the confidence of Illinois' small business community and everybody in the state of Illinois.
But how, and as I mentioned, I have Republican Senate Leader Brady on later in the show. How realistic do you think, given the election year politics, the fact that the partisanship has grown into this great divide, no one wants to give either side any kind of a victory, how realistic do you think it is to expect that there will be a budget agreement?
It depends.
It was never a problem in the past.
It was never a problem in the past. You know what? It depends on how engaged people want to get. It truly depends on whether grassroots organizations and just folks who are tired of the tennis match, it goes back and forth to the detriment of the state, put pressure on their local politicians and compel them to reach out to their party leaders and say, listen, you're endangering me right now. Through this budget impasse. I mean, it's going to come down to us. It looks like people are entrenched or dug in. You know, Rick, a lot of the really good legislators who are right in the middle, the common sense problem solvers, have retired. I mean,
yes.
they said we want. Well, I don't know what they said. I can just tell you they retire. My gut tells me that they just didn't want to endure the nonsense that's going on in Springfield anymore. So we have to push our legislators. You get the government you deserve. I truly believe that. And it's going to be on us to push them not to have another budget impasse. Because I don't know whether the state, frankly, can handle another year like the one we had last year. I think people, if people are leaving now, I think it's just going to get exasperated and it's going to be a whole lot worse.
That's Elliot Richardson, founder and CEO of Small Business Advocacy Council. He's joining me here this morning. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined here in the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue by Elliot Richardson, founder and CEO of the Small Business Advocacy Council. We're talking about their legislative agenda, which I think is more than just your legislative agenda.
Yeah.
I think it's an agenda on the part of others. But here we are. We were talking about the politics of election year as it relates to the budget. But there's also the politics of elections. And one of the things that has been talked about for years is this idea of trying to make or take much of the politics out of the map-making process in Illinois. And, you know, you look to the 1970 Constitution, and they thought it was such a great idea that if both sides couldn't agree, well, you draw a name out of the hat. Because who's going to let something that big go to chance?
Right.
And that's the way everybody's decided to do it, is let it go to chance, unless you have one branch control or one party control the legislature and the governor's office.
Well, it's the Small Business Advocacy Council, we sort of have two different items that we push legislatively. One of the items are really what you just said, big good government, good governance items, because essentially, you know, a small business isn't going to want to grow if, again, they don't believe that the state has a functional government. So some of those things we're pushing is reform to gerrymandering and term limits for leadership. So let me go to the redistricting, the gerrymandering. Legislators should not be able to choose their voters. Voters should be able to choose their legislators. If a small business owner, if an individual does not feel they have a voice in their government or the people that they're going to elect, then they're not going to have confidence in that government. So right now, the maps are drawn by the party in control of the legislature, and they're drawn in a partisan manner. They're drawn in a ridiculous manner. And unfortunately, what you get is uncompetitive races where politicians from both sides of the aisle are more beholden to their political leaders than they are to the voters. And hence, you get budget impasses, you get stalemates. 72% of the people in Illinois believe in reforming our redistricting process and letting that be done by an independent commission. So we have joined a coalition. We are strongly pushing for legislation that would put on a ballot an initiative for redistricting reform and cause those lines that determine so much and give voters a voice to be drawn by an independent commission, not partisan politicians.
And quite frankly, I think much of the problem was caused by the cutback amendment by voters that was brought to us by former governor and current attorney general candidate Pat Quinn, which created single-member districts in contrast to the old three-member districts. And, of course, who in the public doesn't want to get rid of politicians? So that's how this thing came to pass. But what it did was it basically you had three-member districts, two of a majority party, one of a minority party. I used to refer to the House back in I was there covering it in the last year of the old House. It was a floating crap game because you had all of these coalitions that would form from, you know, Chicago Republicans and downstate Democrats. If you were Speaker of the House, you couldn't be sure who whether you had a majority or not on any given day. But it created and incentivized working together and creating coalitions across regional and party lines to accomplish things.
That's a great point, Rick. Unpredictability is a very powerful thing. If you always know what your hand is when you go into the game, you're able to draw lines in the sand and be unwilling to compromise. And that unpredictability is gone. And people say to me, Richardson, why does the Small Business Advocacy Council care about gerrymandering? Again, because the small businesses that want to grow and prosper in the state and employ people are leery to do so without confidence in their government. And if you look at the past several years, why would we have confidence in our government right now? We've got to change that. And redistricting reform is a great way to do it. So that's one of the things on our legislative agenda.
And you also have term limits on legislative leadership.
Exactly. And that falls right into the same camp. And I'll tell you, the SBAC is a nonpartisan organization, and I see the most conservative and the most liberal members of our organization come together on these issues and say, yeah, you know, again, we need confidence in our government. When people are there too long, it doesn't work. We do need term limits for leadership. And that's another. So Senator Morrison filed that bill. It's going to have bipartisan support. And, you know, we're going to push it, and we're going to push legislators not to just talk about it and say they're for it, but to really get engaged and try to push it past the finish line this year.
Why not go the extra step to term limits for legislators?
Well, because there's some contradictory research in that regard on whether or not that puts too much power in the hands of bureaucrats.
Staffers, lobbyists.
I mean, that one I think is a bit more uncertain and not something as an organization that we've been able to say we push 100%. Legislative term limits for leadership, we absolutely can. And we think right now that's really the pain point for how a lot of people feel about our government.
And that wouldn't require a constitutional amendment.
That would not.
I mean, so the process is much simplified, except it's an internal process of the lawmakers, once again, deciding on their own kind of restrictive action against themselves.
Exactly. And I believe the Senate actually changed the rules to put that into place, but the rules can be changed back. So ultimately, we'd like to see this passed.
You mentioned as part of your agenda workers' comp reform.
And yes.
That's just like a perennial, I think, is. And we've, you know, there were times where it seemed like they're close to a deal.
Yeah.
Commas and semicolons. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, out the window.
So a small business owner whose workers' comp rates go up really doesn't give a hoot about the politics, okay, about workers' compensation reform. They want to see a process that works. Unfortunately, workers' compensation reform has been completely politicized. So the SBAC has a proposal that will be legislation that would create a proportional system for workers' compensation causation. And we've talked about this before, Rick. And that is a compromise between where we're at now, which is a 1% causation standard, not fault causation, and where Governor Rauner is. And that's a 50% causation standard. Now, the 50% standard, the 1% standard, I think together, less than 10% of the states have either one of those standards. A proportional causation standard is the law in many more states, over 25 states, in one capacity or another. And that would simply be if you're injured and the cause of your injury is a 25%, if the accident is a 25% cause of your injury, then the employer would be on the hook for 25% of the damages. And we're going to push that. Is it going to move this session? I don't know. But what it should do is start the conversation about a real reform to workers' compensation.
It's going to be a busy session.
It's going to be a busy session, absolutely. And
I'm not sure how productive of one, but it's going to be a busy session.
You know, at some point, I think we're running out of time. But, you know, there is one great bipartisan piece of legislation that we're very excited about. And this is allowing restaurants to serve alcohol within 100 feet of a church. It's been prohibited from an archaic law since the 1920s. We have bipartisan support on that. And when you look about at economic development on the south and the west sides of the city of Chicago throughout this state, that could be a huge boon. So we do think in that respect, we have a really good chance of moving legislation that can empower small businesses and local communities that need the economic development.
And the governor has already vetoed, because these require state legislation for a local, basically zoning kind of issue. And the governor is vetoing these now and saying, get this out of the state's hands and let the locals deal with it.
He's 100% right. Senator Staines and Senator Napoleon Harris have come on to co-sponsor Senator Nybo's bill. This is something that we can do that can really help people.
Well, so there at least there might be something coming out of Springfield.
Absolutely.
It's Elliot Richardson. He's founder and CEO of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Elliot, as always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Last week, the president rolled out his infrastructure plan. He says it could be $1.5 trillion over 10 years through public-private investments. But as for federal dollars, it's really only more like $20 billion a year. Republican Congressman Darren LaHood of Peoria says public-private partnerships probably wouldn't work in rural Illinois.
His plan is a good start. I don't think that's where we'll end up. In some ways, it's unorthodox or unconventional. Much of his plan talks about public-private partnerships. Those seem to make much more sense in urban areas where you can get a rate of return, or you can have toll roads and other similar setups. But I think it's much more difficult in a district like ours that is rural, and you don't have that type of return on investment. I'm all for looking at how the private sector can help. But I think you're going to need a funding source, a user fee of some sort to use. The president in the past has talked about raising the gas tax. He talked about $1.5 trillion in his State of the Union address. I think you got to find a funding source. But there is no doubt we need good infrastructure.
We do need good infrastructure. State Senator Bill Brady, the Illinois Senate Republican leader, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio. We need infrastructure.
We do. And I applaud the president for laying out a plan that we need. I applaud the governor for committing so much money to infrastructure in this year's budget. And hopefully we'll be able to maximize the benefit of whatever federal plan there is. And I think Congressman LaHood is correct. There is great opportunities for private-public partnerships in more urban areas. In some of the rural areas, which I represent,
right,
Bloomington to Springfield, it would be more difficult to find that kind of an investment. But certainly we need to leverage private sector dollars to maintain and increase that infrastructure.
Yeah, I can't exactly see a toll road between on the stretch from Morton to Lincoln.
That might be possible, but I don't see it from Washington to El Paso.
Yes, very good point. Well, Senator Brady, I wanted to have you in here. We just had the governor's budget address last week, and I know you emphasize the term balanced budget,
right,
as does the governor. Not so sure it goes that far, but it appears to be a more comprehensive framework than what we've seen in the past.
Well, first of all, because of the political discourse in Springfield and the fact that...
Discourse or discord?
Mike Madigan passed his own budget last year and a court order budget. We haven't seen a balanced budget for years, decades, I would argue, in the fundamental sense. Governor Rauner has proposed something that literally is balanced. Now, does it require some actions just like other governors have introduced? Yes, but it does not require pension reform in terms of court-approved pension reform to balance the budget. The governor balances this budget. He calls for some cuts, as he must do, and some better policies in my mind, but he also calls for pension reform, but to be used to provide a lowering of the tax increase that the Democrat Madigan budget imposed back on the citizens of this state that was supposed to be temporary under Pat Quinn. So I think it's a fundamental, foundational blueprint that in general, can be accepted by a bipartisan. And I applaud the governor for giving us really the first fundamental blueprint that is technically balanced.
I'll let you use that term. I still think there are lots of questions here about, and we'll talk about the pension and the bright, shiny object, as I refer to it, later. But for some of the things for this budget, where he talks about, removing group health insurance right from collective bargaining.
Well, the governor rightly has studied what other states do and what the private sector has done. And in this state, we pay about 85%, roughly, of the employee's health insurance costs. No other state does that. The private sector doesn't do that. He's called for approximately a 20% reduction, which still puts us above average and slightly above that. He's been fighting the public sector unions on behalf of all of government and of the citizens of the state, and he's asking for what it would be reasonable. He was saddled with a $2 billion structural deficit going into fiscal year 19 based on the budget that the Democrats passed, unfortunately, because we were so close to a great resolution last year. And he had to make some changes. This is one of the fairest ways. No one is going to be, I shouldn't say no one, there will be, taxpayers, I think, will be thrilled with the outcome of this budget. But those people who rely on government funds and services are probably not going to be thrilled with this, except for, I feel, educators who are seeing the reform proposal that we passed last year incorporate as a priority in this budget over $350 million in tier funding in accordance with what the legislature and the governor's task force agreed was the best way to prioritize new dollars to education.
But isn't there just kind of an opposites here of things where you've got shifting more of the pension costs for schools onto local school districts at the same time that you've just changed the formula model? You've got calls for property tax freeze and lowering property taxes, yet shifting the property tax burden, shifting the pension burden yeah. onto local schools creates the potential for property tax increases. To me, it's almost, in some respects, reminds me of the Reagan New Federalism right. of pushing more of government down the line onto the local level.
Listen, we were saddled with a $2 billion, the governor was saddled with a $2 billion structural deficit going into this year. He's cutting state government spending. We're asking the locals to deal with it as well because the taxpayers cannot afford more. This governor has said no more taxes. In fact, called for a plan to incrementally roll back. So we're not asking local governments to do anything we can't do. We do know that school districts, ever since Mike Madigan proposed the pension cost shift years ago, school districts have been planning and thinking about that this eventually would happen for two reasons. One is, they control normal cost of pensions. They don't control the legacy cost. Speaker Madigan's proposal, I felt, eventually would have taken legacy and normal cost. What I applaud Governor Rauner for, that I faulted Speaker Madigan for, is local government shouldn't be responsible for the bad policies of state government, legacy cost of pensions, but they should be responsible for the cost they control. That's the normal cost. So by putting that cost where belongs. And by the way, there's estimates that 26 cents of every dollar that the state collects now goes toward pensions and health insurance. Administrative cost of running state government is more than any program that we have. So we've got to rein that in. And yes, property taxpayers deserve relief too. And that will just force local governments to live within the current means that they have. I believe they can do that. Does everyone have to pay a little bit to get this state turned around? Yes. Is it worth it? Absolutely.
We're speaking with Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady from Bloomington. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady of Bloomington. Leader Brady, we have got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. I first have to make a real quick comment. As a 50-year White Sox fan, I'm excitedly welcome the White Sox to the Big 720. Had to get that out, Rick.
That's good. That's good. We're happy to have them, too.
Now we know Ron's age.
Hey, Mr. Brady, I always enjoy when you come on. My question to you, what is going to be the message that the Republican Party gives to the voters, you know, to get them back in office, maybe to pick up some seats? The governor didn't get a lot from his turnaround agenda, and the message can't just be that Mike Madigan is the problem. And I think the governor dropped the ball when he said he's not in charge. But just maybe give me one or two things that you think that can at least attract the voters. So thanks, Rick and Mr. Brady.
Well, I think it's consistent, Ron, with what the governor ran on, and that is Springfield needs to be shaken up. We are in a death spiral. One of the biggest parts of contention between Speaker Madigan and Governor Rauner is Governor Rauner doesn't want the status quo. Speaker Madigan has had, I'm sure he's proud of what he thinks his record has accomplished. He's been there for over 40-some years. Governor Rauner wants to continue to fight for a new Illinois, and he's not going to quit. And there's no question that Speaker Madigan has vetoed many of the things, unilaterally vetoed many of the things that this governor has wanted to put in place that I think the people want. And he's talking about those things. This balanced budget that he introduced this last week and instituting the priorities. We will continue to talk about job-creating policies. The governor knows better than anybody why we need these job-creating policies, because there's no one who's ever been a better salesman. You know, in my area, he helped bring Brand Industries 500 jobs in spite of some of the difficulties. But when he's talking to people like GE and other companies, and GE and other companies are saying, hey, Massachusetts, a liberal Democratic bastion, put these reforms in place to keep and bring jobs to their state, and other states are doing it. When he sees Indiana growing union jobs compared to Illinois, he knows that these changes need to take place so that everyone in Illinois can grow. That's what that agenda is going to be. We have the second highest property tax system in the country, if not the highest. We've got to have an emphasis on protecting property taxpayers so they aren't forced to leave this state. We can't continue the out-migration that we've seen in this state. So I think it's a pro-jobs, balanced budget agenda that we will run on that, frankly, the Democrats cannot compete with. They have even admitted recently that their budget last year with a huge tax increase is not balanced.
Although it was, in some respects, predicated on the budget estimates of the governor.
Yes, but the spending. I mean, I worked along with former leader Chris Redonio in our caucus to try to come up with, and President Culleton and his caucus to come up with that. And a lot of the initiatives that we talked in that process were left off the cutting room floor, and the governor's estimates were predicated on job growth. You talked about it earlier in the earlier segment, workers' compensation. Democrats continue to veto that. We had a good workers' compensation program that would have saved businesses and, frankly, protected workers. But yet, because at the last minute, Speaker Madigan chose to run his budget at the urging of his members, I'm going to tell you, and eliminate and leave all those reforms and all those benefits on the cutting room floor, we were left with a systemic, unbalanced budget that wouldn't grow jobs the way we had supported in that last year's session.
Are we in for another budget impasse, do you believe?
You know, I don't think so. I was talking to the speaker the other day, and I said, you know, can we get this budget together? I mean, the governor's given us a foundation. He probably didn't agree with that. But I said, we've got enough history to run campaigns on. Let's do this for the people of Illinois. And he agreed. I know Governor Rauner wants to see that. But frankly, there is enough history out there on issues to run as effective a campaign as anyone wants. We can't, I believe, a six-month budget would not be good, better than no budget, better than a court-order budget. But I'm hopeful in my conversations, and I applaud the governor. He brought Speaker Madigan, President Culleton, Leader Durkin, and myself into a meeting this last week and said, listen, gentlemen.
For the first time in how long?
Well, you know, it was a cordial meeting. It's a start.
No, I understand that, but
let's face it. There is a bitter issue between Speaker Madigan and Governor Reiner. Governor Reiner wants change. He wants reform. Speaker Madigan likes what he's got. And to his, you know, I'm not saying he doesn't feel he's been doing the right thing, but we need, I believe the people of Illinois think we need Governor Reiner's change. But I will tell you this.
So if you're against
it. The point is we had the meeting. The governor said this. He said, listen, gentlemen, I need your help. We need a balanced budget. We cannot raise taxes. I'm going to introduce a plan that does that. I'm going to, in fact, introduce a plan that will roll back the tax increase on pension reform, but only on pension reform. It's not tied to the budget. If you embrace those principles, I'm willing to talk to you about anything.
But to dangle that bright, shiny object of the tax cut, which would be predicated on something.
John Colleton's pension proposal.
Understand, it's still
President Colleton's pension proposal.
But the only ad I'm seeing on TV is Bruce Rauner saying a billion-dollar tax cut. I'm not seeing a John Colleton ad saying that. That's why I'm saying to dangle this bright, shiny object, knowing that it would be litigated for years.
I don't know, but years. Maybe a year. Certainly wouldn't take effect in the 19 budget. I think we all agree with that.
Which is clear. That's why it's not part of the budget. But nevertheless, to commit to this billion-dollar tax cut, which if it were to even pass, would be litigated for years.
I don't know about years. As I said, I think it could be implemented as early as 2020. I believe it's – I mean, this is something John Colleton, who's opposed every other – pension reform based on constitutional
questions
has said this would
in his belief
and even the unions were inclined to support this a few years ago. And I understand that game's changed and that will make it difficult to pass, but you know, we are elected to take tough votes. When 26% of your state spending is tied to pensions and health care, operations of government, not going to schools, not going to human service providers, not going to the most needy in our state. We've got a problem. The governor realizes that. He's outlined a plan. Part of that is curbing pension costs. We have to do something, or frankly, the pensions of the people who've worked so hard for the state and earned them are going to be at risk. We will run out of money.
That's Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady of Bloomington. Leader Brady, thank you as always for joining me this morning.
Well, it's good to be here, and thank you for letting me represent my Republican caucus in the Senate.
Anytime. You are always welcome.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is my good friend Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. Brian, good morning and thanks for joining me.
Good to talk to you, Rick.
And there's no shortage of things to talk about.
No.
Well,
it's one of those weeks.
Yeah, and it seems like they're always one of those weeks, right?
Yeah, that's the pace of it these days.
We've been talking a lot this morning about Governor Rauner's budget message, and we just heard from Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady about his take, and I appreciate the leader representing the party by referring to it as a balanced budget. I would suggest that maybe it's a more comprehensive framework than we've seen in the past, but again, not a balanced budget.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the sense, I guess the bar was set pretty low last year because the governor just had sort of one line that said $4.7 billion working together on a grand bargain.
So, yeah, that was kind of the Hail Mary pass of the...
Right, as long as, in the sense that there was not that sort of like huge gaping hole. I mean, yes, he does account for all the dollars and cents, but it requires a lot of changes in laws to get those to happen. And not just changes in laws in order to get everything to happen, but he really needs the Democrats to abandon longtime ideology and political positions and just completely come over to, basically what's a rebranded version of the turnaround agenda he's been pushing for the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at things like removing group health insurance from collective bargaining.
Right. Right. I mean, that has been the main thing that's been holding up, or one of the main things that's been holding up. I mean, state government workers who are in the AFSCME union, which represents tens of thousands of people who work in state government, they haven't had a contract since the first 6 months of the governor's administration. And the reason that has come to an impasse, or seems to be at an impasse, that's actually a legal term that people are fighting about now.
Right.
The reason they haven't been able to come to an agreement is largely because of what the governor wants to do to change health care costs for state workers and increase them. And full disclosure, I mean, my radio station is part of a state university. I would be affected by that as well.
Well, and so there's issues always come down to collective bargaining matters. And even in these concepts of doing the shifting of pensions to local school districts that he calls for, obviously, coupled with that would be, quote, mandate relief, which in the view of several Republicans, including the governor, would mean changing collective bargaining.
Yeah, this year he calls them giving local governments, school districts, the tools they need to manage costs, which, again, is just another way of saying what he's been saying all along, that, I mean, he is not a fan of public employee unions. He's been more and less clear about that, depending on what audience he's talking to and in what phase of his campaign he's in. But he just does not think that it's really right that people be able labor unions be able to bargain for benefits and wages, and he would rather just have public employee unions bargaining over work conditions and just have the governments be able to set the wages and benefits. I mean, that's his ultimate vision. And then he's, you know, outlined a series of steps to try and get there. But the Democrats just do not want to go along with that plan whatsoever. And probably if they were being, you know, in their hearts, a lot of Republicans might not want to go, you know, about that plan. I mean, remember, downstate is a largely Republican area, and there are a lot of state employees who work downstate in state prisons and other institutions and places like that.
Well, and, you know, when you look at a budget and I term what's doable, and
right,
you throw these positions out there, they're ideological positions, but not necessarily doable positions.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, the budget situation in Illinois, even though they raised taxes last year, I think anyone who looks at the budget in sort of a dispassionate, non-political way say they probably did not raise taxes enough. I mean, they settled on a number that was just below 5%, but that was after 2 years of the budget impasse where, you know, this is not intuitive, but we actually spent a lot more than we probably would have had we had a real budget in place, because so much the courts came in and ordered a lot of spending on health care and state employee pay, and, you know, there's a lot of money that just, as you know, has to go out the door to pay off, you know, old pension costs and pay off bondholders for the state of Illinois. So we spent more than we took in during the budget impasse, so we built up this backlog of bills, the state's debt, effectively. And so, I mean, he does have a hard problem to solve to balance the budget. And, you know, if the Democrats and Republicans in the legislature choose not to use his, I think you called it a framework, they're going to have a hard problem to solve in balancing or coming up with a budget that's even, you know, balanced on paper.
Well, and even, you know, even to the point of whether you agree or disagree with what the governor is suggesting here, it is now the ball is in the Democrats' court and as the controlling party in the General Assembly.
It is, but I think there's also going to be, we're going to see a lot of pressure on and perhaps even from those 16 or some number of those 16 Republicans who broke ranks last year to work with the Democrats on passing a budget for the first time in 2 years and raising taxes. And there are quite a lot of lame ducks in the legislature this year. I think we're up to, I don't know if it was 24 or 30, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, of people who are leaving the General Assembly who, you know, might be willing to cast a more politically unpopular vote. I'm not saying I would be surprised if we had another tax increase, but I think that does give us, you know, better chances of getting an actual budget at some point in, you know, the next fiscal year than we've had in the last few before that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of torn in what I think will happen, whether that we will get a full budget or we just get a maintenance 6-month budget and kind of punt it to the whoever the next governor is.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because, of course, that's kind of what happened back in 2014 when people right. were, you know, they thought they didn't want to, because the income tax, it was set at 5 percentage points for the individuals there, and it was going to sink, and it was scheduled to roll back at the end of the year, and they thought, well, we'll just punt it and make the next governor deal with it, or whether that be, you know, Governor Quinn reelected or Governor Rauner. And I think, you know, maybe some people learned a lesson that that wasn't the best strategy back then. From that standpoint, because that led to the budget impasse. So,
yes, and but it's not going to be easy, regardless, to try to put together any kind of a true fiscal framework.
No, and it's because, you know, they fudged a lot last year too in the budget, right? That this current year that we're the current year that we're in, we're supposed to have $200-300 million from selling the Thompson Center. Well, that hasn't happened yet. So the governor put that in his budget, and you know, as far as I know, you can only sell a building once.
Right.
So you know,
this is Chicago. You know,
right. Be creative about it. But so you know, that's $200-300 million we're going to have to make up, and there are other shortfalls other places. There were things that they did that are, you know, budget gimmicks, kind of one time revenues. You sweep a bunch of funds. Illinois has this crazy number of funds that, you know, we have one fund from the fees we collect from doctor licensing, one fund from this, one fund from that, and you know, sometimes money builds up in those and they can just kind of go in and sweep that money up, but you can't necessarily do that every year either. And now we have this, you know, voters in the last election approved a so-called lockbox on the road fund and transportation money, and that's only supposed to be used for transportation. So you know, there's just a little less flexibility every year you go into this, you know, because of the past spending and how much money we need to make up ground on. So it's going to be a challenge.
Brian, my favorite fund that the state of Illinois has is the Lust Fund.
The Lust Fund, yes.
Leaking underground storage tanks, folks. That's what that fund means, okay?
For the gas stations that would have leaky tanks. I'm partial to the Dry Cleaner Environmental Recovery Trust Fund.
Yes, indeed.
Strangely named fund.
Okay, that's our geekiness for right now. Okay. We're speaking with Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. This is your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone, Brian Mackey, state government and politics reporter for NPR Illinois. Brian, we were talking obviously about the budget and budget issues. There's that, I call it the bright, shiny object, the governor dangling the prospect of a $1 billion tax cut if changes were made regarding state pensions. And I tend to think that is something that is more of a campaign slogan than anything else. Just as I mentioned to Leader Bill Brady, the Senate Republican leader, that would take years to litigate.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it's pretty striking. He just a week before his budget address, he was giving a speech in Springfield to the Sangamon County Republicans at their Lincoln Day dinner, and he told them, "I'm going to bring your, you know, we're going to keep going." He's trying to fire up the crowd. "We're going to bring your taxes down to 3% over the next 2 years." And there was nothing that would get there in his budget address. Instead of, I mean, that would require a 1.7 percentage point drop, almost a 2% drop in the tax rates. He proposed a 0.25% drop in the tax rate that would probably take 2.5-3 years if it even got through the courts, if this pension change that he's pushing now, you know, is found to be constitutional, which is an open question.
Well, and some people just say, well, why not amend the Constitution and take out the pension clause that pensions are a contractual right that cannot be diminished or impaired.
Yeah, and the governor is one of those people. I think that's one of the 44 points of his original turnaround agenda. But, of course, changing the Constitution would require going before the voters and getting their approval. And even if you do change the Constitution, that can affect future employees. But the language of the Constitution, it doesn't just say pensions are protected. The specific wording is important. It says pensions are membership in a pension plan is a contractual right. And that goes, you know, that invokes you know, not only state law and the state constitution, but the federal constitution and the English common law. So, I mean, the contractual rights is the basis of our economy, of our capitalist system. And so it's not clear that just by changing the constitution, you could get out of benefits that have already been accrued in the system and for people who are already in the system.
Yeah, it's highly questionable that you could make retroactive changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, the Constitution means what it says it does until you can convince a panel of Supreme Court justices that it means something else. So I don't expect that in my lifetime we'll ever see people stop trying to change this because there's just so much money at stake. You know, $130-140 billion, whatever the current unfunded liability is in our pension system.
I want to shift gears a little bit. We've seen Speaker Madigan forced to respond to an issue involving a former top political aide over the issue of sexual harassment involving a former campaign worker. A lot of questions going on about, obviously, the hashtag MeToo movement and how that's changing the dynamic all across the country in various occupations, but a new dynamic when it comes to political campaigns. There's not exactly an HR department that somebody can go to in a political campaign.
No, these are probably smaller organizations that most people realize. I mean, sure, your presidential campaign might have an HR department or something like that, but most of these are pretty small, pretty informal. People work long hours, and so it can be challenging. And it's, you know, the sort of setup where there's a power dynamic. You want to advance. You want to get hired for that next campaign because a lot of these people just work on contracts. And so it can make it very challenging. If somebody feels they're being harassed by a supervisor, who do you go to? And, of course, the speaker, you know, having the mystique of being the speaker, I think people probably like to not go to him with things unless, you know, it's a really bad problem. And as you said, the person who is alleged to be doing the harassing behavior in this case was one of the speaker's top political aides for many, many years. And that just made it a very difficult situation for the woman who was one of the, you know, sort of lower level campaign workers, but, you know, still had been active in the Madigan political organization for several election cycles now. She was getting these text messages from this aide and, you know, trying to ask her out and urging her again and again. And, you know, from what your newspaper published, it looked like she was pretty firm and pretty clear to me about saying, I'm not interested, I'm not interested, I'm not interested. And yet it continued. And even after she went to her supervisor and, you know, reported it, who happened to be the alleged harasser's brother, Alderman Marty Quinn in Chicago, this person was not removed from the campaign apparatus, and ultimately she felt she had to leave.
And so questions about how the speaker responded. He said he received a letter from the woman and that he directed an internal investigation using a lawyer tied to the party to conduct this investigation, and that began in November, and it ended apparently pretty close to the same time that the Tribune was going to run this story last Monday.
Remarkably close, although they do deny any connection, and the attorney for the speaker says she was not aware that the Tribune was working on a story, but it is almost the exact same time that they finally decided to fire this aide as the Elena Hampton, the woman who's alleging this behavior, went and spoke with one of your colleagues at the Tribune.
Optics being optics. And so now we see the speaker saying he has to do better.
Yeah, which is a change in this. This is one of these situations that it's moving day by day. I thought Mark Brown at the Sun-Times had an interesting take. You know, the speaker's used to fighting Republicans. He's used to fighting Democrats. But the Me Too movement is even more powerful than the speaker, perhaps. And so we saw early in the week he held a news conference to address some of these questions. And he basically stood behind his lawyer, which is very unusual. If he decides to talk to the media, I mean, you've been watching him longer than I have. He usually talks. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. But I've never really seen him sit there and just point at his lawyer as people were asking, Mr. Speaker, what about this, what about that? And then he would just motion to his lawyer and she would answer. But by the end of the week, he was writing a letter to his members, the members of the House of Representatives, the Democrats, and saying, you know, I need to do better. And this old school mentality of, hey, knock it off, that's not good enough anymore.
Much more ahead, there's no doubt about that. Brian Mackey from NPR Illinois, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's good to talk to you, Rick. Have a good rest of your Sunday.
You as well. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Elliot Richardson from the Small Business Advocacy Council, Illinois Senate Republican leader Bill Brady of Bloomington, and Brian Mackey from NPR Illinois. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a big day today. We've got, first of all, we're giving away Elton John concert tickets today. So please start your kissing up to Uncle Dean early. plenty of time to get your bribes in between now and when we give them away coming up a little later on. But we also have on the show today more of my one-on-one interviews with what will resoundingly be the number one movie of the weekend, Black Panther.
Unbelievable.
It's breaking records like crazy this weekend. It's one of the best-reviewed movies in years. We'll talk with Oscar winner Lupita Nyong'o today and Oscar winner Forrest Whitaker. And we've got the stars of this new sequel to Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera. It's called Love Never Dies. Just opened at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Lots of Chicago talent in the show, including young 13-year-old Casey Lyons.
Wow.
Who is an amazing performer. And just full disclosure, happens to be the son of my boss at the TV station.
Jennifer
Lyons.
Wow.
13-year-old son. But
wow.
Anyone who has heard this young man perform is blown away by his voice, his talent, his theatricality. He's a superstar in the making.
How great for him, and how great for Jen.
That's
I mean,
right.
Wow, exactly. That's fantastic.
So that's pretty cool. Cute kids on the show today. Evelyn, we have a new feature that we're starting today called Kids Sports, where we're going to have young people who have been writing into us to come on the show and do the sports.
Do the sports.
Today. They're going to do the sports cast.
Oh, they're going to do the sports cast.
They are going to do the sports cast.
I like this. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah, we're just preparing the new generation.
Well, kind of a variation of the Friday weather.
A little bit of on the TV show on Fridays, we have young people come in and do the weather. I would argue that this is far more difficult.
Well, it is. Much more difficult.
Yeah. Anybody can look at a map and go, oh, there's a cloud.
Right, and point
look,
there. Yeah, right.
Look, there's a sun.
I like this. I'm going to listen to this.
No, the kids love
this. That's right. Hello, Andy.
I just got here last week.
Andy who?
Come on.
The kids love their Uncle Dean. This is the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and now Chicago White Sox baseball, 720 WGN Chicago. We'll